Welcome to the LDN Radio Show, brought to you by the LDN Research Trust. I'm your host, Linda Elsiegood. I have an exciting lineup of guest speakers who are LDN experts in their field. We will be discussing low-dose naltrexone and its many uses in autoimmune diseases, cancers, etc. You're invited to join us on air, asking your questions by calling in on the local rate phone numbers in the UK and the US, which can be found on ldnradio.org. Thank you for joining us. Today we're joined by Dr. Patrick Callas, who 2 days ago joined the SciMedica Health Group in Canada, and we wish him every success. The naturopathic doctors at SciMedica Health Group will treat you, not your diagnosis, and specialising in creating individualised treatment plans that deliver results regardless of your situation. If you're in the Greater Vancouver area of British Columbia, Canada, go to scimedicahealth.com, scimedicahealth.com, or call 604-541-8811. Well, thank you very much for joining us today, Patrick.
Thank you for having me, Linda.
Now, we've spoken before and you're on our Vimeo channel, but for those people that haven't heard that, and like I just said, that you have started in a new practice, what has been your experience of LDN so far? What led you to find LDN?
Great question, and thank you for the introduction. My new location here in the British Columbia, appreciate it. So when I started practice about 5 years ago, I went and preceptored or studied under Dr. Neil McKinney, who's a naturopathic physician and has spent his career of about 30 years in naturopathic oncology care, so cancer care. And that's where I was first introduced to low-dose naltrexone. Last count, I think he prescribed it to over, I want to say, 10,000 patients over the course of since he was made aware of it and his career. So as we saw patients coming through there, mainly dealing with cancer, I saw the majority of them were put on LDN as part of a greater protocol. And, you know, certainly we're seeing some great responses, you know, without going on in great detail, because, I mean, there's so many cases that have come through there. And rarely would he would use it as a standalone in cancer, which most of us naturopathic doctors don't, but we do use it as a very important adjunctive therapy. We're seeing some great results. I mean, so much so that local oncologists and other medical doctors were sending patients to Dr. McKinney, or, you know, even those who had been combative or skeptical, at the very least, had changed their viewpoint because of the results they were seeing him getting. You know, I remember one of them telling him that he knew that patients of his that were in getting chemotherapy IV drips, he could tell which ones they were because they're the ones who were doing so much better. They didn't look as nauseous and tired and worn out in the IV room or even in their follow-up appointments in general. So it caught my attention then, and certainly reading some of the evidence and case studies for it for irritable bowel diseases, Crohn's and ulcerative colitis, was pretty impressive too. And so one of my first experiences in my own private practice when I was practicing in Salt Spring Island, which is a little Gulf island just off the coast of Vancouver here in British Columbia, Canada, in my little family practice there, as I saw a woman in her mid-50s, and she was pretty anorexic. I think she was below 100 pounds. She's been diagnosed with ulcerative colitis, and she said she tried everything, and her diet was increasingly shrinking in the sense that she started to limit her diet to cope with the inflammation and the severe pain of the disease and all the bowel upset that occurs with it and the bleeding has helped. But as she shrunk her diet, more of the foods that she could tolerate became problems for her. And so her diet was shrinking. There was less things she could tolerate eating, which was a horrible state of affairs for her, obviously. But, you know, thin, fatigued, and very pale. And the only thing she wanted to do for me, although I had a couple other recommendations, was to use low-dose naltrexone, because she'd read about it on the web. And I said, yeah, I think that's a really reasonable thing to try. And within less than 3 months, I think it was within about 6 to 8 weeks, she started to put weight back on. I saw her in a follow-up appointment 4 months later. She put on over 20 pounds, and she was just so excited because she'd added foods back into her diet that she hadn't eaten in over 2 years and was tolerating them really well and doing really great. So that was a big eye-opener for me beyond just reading about it and hearing about it and seeing it through my mentor for what LDN could do for ulcerative colitis and other bowel autoimmune diseases.
So in those 5 years, what other cases did you treat LDN for? Do you use LDN in conjunction with other therapies? Do you add it in last? Do you try it first?
Great question. It depends on the case and what I'm seeing in front of me. I do, since appearing on the previous interview we did and on your website, I have had some people just calling about just wanting to do LDN. But in general, I'm a naturopathic doctor, so I like to mix best therapies, whether they're prescription or herbal or other, in together. So I tend to use it in conjunction with other therapies. Certainly when it comes to cancer care, I would consider it adjunctive. I wouldn't use it on its own, but I would use it with a few other best choice remedies. But to answer your question, what have I used it for in my own practice in the last 5 years? I have also used it in majority of my cancer patients. I have used it for a few of my Lyme disease or chronic tick-borne illness patients. And I've used it for a few other autoimmune conditions. I've used it for a few rheumatoid arthritis cases with benefit. And more recently, I've even used it for Sjogren's syndrome. For those people who aren't familiar with Sjogren's, a bit of an unusual one, it dries out the mucous membranes. So for the woman who I've been using it with, really dry eyes, like unbelievably dry eyes, where if she doesn't wake up every few hours to put drops in, her eyelids will literally tear. Although I haven't seen that many multiple sclerosis or MS patients, I did use it once earlier on. But they, I don't think we got a good enough try at using it. They didn't persist at using it long enough based on current evidence. That was really early on in my career. So most of my experiences with cancer care, Lyme disease, and some of the autoimmune conditions of the bowel mainly.
Mm-hmm. Vitamin D
is
always a big topic with people. How do you stand on vitamin D?
It's a very narrow pale bottle, so I stand very precariously. Sorry, literal translation there. What is my stance on it? I do think it's a real essential nutrient. I mean, I'm a naturopathic doctor, so I'll admit that my bias is always going to be, you know, one of the underlying causes of addressing any health condition is making sure the body has enough of the basic nutrients. And vitamin D is one that, if you look at the mountains of research on it, it by itself, if your levels are good, may not be, you know, it's not certainly not a miracle cure. But for people who have depleted levels of vitamin D, getting the levels up to a normal level can be profoundly helpful for helping with autoimmune conditions, for regulating their immune system, for improving their immune defenses against colds and flus, for preventing cancer, preventing heart disease and stroke. I mean, it goes right across the board that levels are low. There's a great increase at risk of a lot of diseases. So I do really feel it's important to get vitamin D in. And as an interesting piece of information, I'm starting to see some of the doctors, based on some more recent evidence, who are trying to prevent or treat cancer, really increasing their dosing recommendations. I think even Akbar Khan, I'd read, I know you've interviewed before, a medical doctor in Toronto, that I believe I was reading him, he's saying that he not only recommends, but he also takes, I want to say like 10,000 IUs, don't quote me on that, but it was a really high dose, 10, which is more than I would have previously recommended. Yeah, maybe we were talking about that previously as well. And I find that really fascinating. I do think it's really valuable and, you know, subjective information from one guy who happens to be a naturopathic doctor, me. I certainly do find, I think it was maybe after we talked, I hadn't really been taking vitamin D regularly, and I certainly did notice improvement in my mood and energy just getting just taking 4,000 to 5,000 IUs daily. So I think it's really, really important nutrient. And if someone's wondering, well, how do I know if I need more vitamin D? You know, a blood test is probably your best bet to tell if your levels are within, you know, if they're too low and you certainly want to get them to optimal level. You know, and the only caution is, if you are taking bigger doses, you probably do want to test every so often, or maybe take breathers in the summer if you're getting some sun exposure, because you can overdo vitamin D. It takes quite a bit. I'll give you an example. I had one patient who had misunderstood my instructions on taking. I said to take 2 drops of vitamin D, which is 2,000 IUs, which is a pretty conservative amount, really. And they were taking 2 dropperfuls for months. And they started to get a kidney stones because they're hyper-absorbing calcium. Now, that's a massive dose, I mean, way beyond 10,000 IUs, and it took them, I would say, at least 6 or more months before they had any symptoms. So I'm sure if we tested her blood levels, they would have been through the roof at that point. But, you know, very safe when taken in, you know, the ranges of anywhere from 2,000 to 10,000 IUs, it would seem, and can be very effective. And certainly, true to Britain, and certainly most of Canada, we live so far above the equator that we just don't really get enough sun exposure. And then you add in, you know, using sunscreens and covering up, and you're not going to really convert enough in the sunshine.
I was told by one doctor to stay out in the sun for 30 minutes before putting sunscreen on, so you actually absorbed some vitamin D before you blocked it.
I totally agree. I recommend that. You know, if you're a fair-skinned person, you know, like some of my ancestors up from in Ireland, or other pale UK ancestors I have as well, then you may want to, you know, start at 5 to 10 minutes if it's been winter and, you know, you're quite pale. I always joke that parts of my skin are translucent. so you start smaller and then build up because you don't want to get out in the sun too long. But I think we've become very scared of skin cancer, which, you know, is a valid concern, but it's a big gap between going out, you know, for 30 minutes or less, or building up sort of a tolerance and letting your skin respond to natural sun exposure, as opposed to going out for 3, 4, 5 hours without previous exposure and getting burnt, because that's what we really want to avoid is severe burn. That's when the body has difficulty dealing with the damage that might occur, and that's when we really have a higher risk of skin cancer occurring. But I completely think and recommend that, you know, gradual exposure or shorter term exposure, like you suggested, before applying sunscreen is really reasonable and an effective thing to do.
When my grandson was a baby, my daughter and I took him away on holiday, and we went to Turkey. It was really, really hot, and he's a redhead, and he was 18 months old. Now, I sat in the shade and covered myself up with cream, but I had a slight tan. My daughter sat out in the sun and had a low factor cream, and she came back brown. The grandson, we were constantly at that in those days, 50 sunscreen was the, you know, factor 50 was the highest, and we were constantly putting it on him. And when he came back, he looked as though we'd left him at home. He was still white, you know. White. He hadn't got any sun at all because we were so scared of him getting burnt, because that was the, you know, the last thing we wanted. But it was just really odd how, you know, 3 people went off all looking the same and coming back and different degrees of being brown. It's really funny. But my other question to you, when somebody comes to you and you prescribe all these natural things and supplements and vitamins and things, you said have a blood test for vitamin D. What else would you suggest if somebody was deficient in something? Are they all blood tests to find out what you're low in, or is there other ways of detecting?
Yeah, great question. It depends on what nutrients, some of it can be symptom-based in terms of determining or helping determine or narrow down what minerals or nutrients might be deficient. And also, if there are other pre-existing health conditions, you know, like someone has a really chronic diarrhea, constipation, irritable bowel syndrome, or something more severe and diagnosed, like celiac disease or an irritable bowel disease, then we have increased suspicion of suspecting certain nutrients not being absorbed into the body. So it's a combination of, you know, largely relying on looking at symptoms and diet and taking a good history and really evaluating where the patient's at and what likely nutrient deficiencies might be occurring. And then beyond that, there are lab tests, whether it's urine, blood, or even hair samples to help start narrowing down or getting a bit of a clearer picture of what nutrients, you know, vitamins, minerals might be low in someone's body. I suspect, and my professional opinion is that most naturopathic doctors anyway, we're dealing more with looking at the history and whatever conditions or symptoms have come up, and then working backwards to determine which nutrients are likely to be low in those cases. And also for people who are on prescription medications, particularly in larger doses or longer term, there are some known nutrient depletions that occur, so deficiencies that are more likely with certain medications. So we take that into account too, but it doesn't always involve getting blood drawn.
Well, I was just thinking that, you know, if you had to have different tests, it would get rather expensive.
Yeah, it certainly can. A real comprehensive test. I mean, right now, there's a lab I would use in the U.S., either down in Texas, and comprehensive mineral and vitamin test, I think, comes in around $500 Canadian. Might even be a little bit more now with the exchange rate. So it can become very cost prohibitive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, we'll take a quick break and we'll be back in just a minute.
The naturopathic doctors at SciMedica Health Group will treat you, not your diagnosis, and specialise in creating individualised treatment plans that deliver results regardless of your situation. If you're in the Greater Vancouver area of British Columbia, Canada, go to SciMedicaHealth.com, SciMedicaHealth.com, or call 604-541-8811.
The Lyme disease documentary. Please can we ask for your help and support? We've been trying to raise funds to produce our documentary on Lyme disease. We want to explore all the elements of this controversial disease and to produce a documentary film and an expansive educational resource where all interviews are published. We're almost there, but we still need to raise a further $10,000 to make it the best it could be. Please can you help by making a donation today at www.ldnresearchtrust.org/Lyme. Every donation, however small, really helps. Thank you in advance.
The best description that I've ever heard of Lyme disease was a patient who said, "Lyme disease doesn't kill you, but it does take your life away." And I think that sums up how it feels for most people. I don't think there's anybody who's lived for a significant length of time with Lyme disease who hasn't wondered if they would rather be dead.
Right, welcome back. We've got a question here, which is quite interesting. It's from a lady called Lisset. She says she has a great friend who was diagnosed with ALS and is also diabetic. She'd recently heard through research that it's linked to Lyme disease, but she's not sure. And can LDN treat and improve ALS?
I'm not as familiar with its use in ALS, so I can't really answer that question myself, but I could address the question linked to Lyme disease a little bit. The symptom profile that appears in ALS can, or even the diagnosis of ALS, can be underpinned or caused by Lyme disease or other tick-borne illness. It's not, I don't know the percents, and I don't know if they exist or not, but it is certainly something worth investigating or ruling out, especially if anyone is in a high-risk area for exposure to tick bites. The trick, too, is always, even if you're not aware of being bitten by ticks, a lot of tick bites go undetected as part of the problem. So I do think it's worth pursuing at least and ruling out a diagnosis of Lyme or tick-borne illness if someone is facing ALS or dealing with ALS.
Okay. And Jill has a question. She says, some autoimmune diets, like the paleo autoimmune diet and Dr. Amy Meyer's plan, forbid beans, lentils, nuts, seeds, saying that lectins and phytates, is it, can cause inflammation and leaky gut. Other experts like Dr. Michael Greger at nutritionfacts.org cite scientific findings that these same foods reduce inflammation and promote longevity and should ideally replace animal proteins, saying that animal proteins cause inflammation and leaky gut. What do you suggest about people with autoimmune disorders eating organic beans, lentils, nuts, and seeds?
Do they cause
inflammation, or do they help reduce inflammation?
Yeah, it becomes very confusing, and there's so many different opinions on food. It's sort of like you navigate all the food recommendations, you'd be eating water and grass, maybe. My perspective, and call me Canadian or a naturopath for saying so, is a little more moderation. You know, I think one of the basic foundations for what I recommend is not overdoing or overeating anything. If you presumably something the paleo diet is trying to harken back to is a diet that we would have eaten ancestrally thousands or tens of thousands of years ago. But you can still, in a lot of diets, you can be caught in kind of a very narrowed amount of foods or eating too much of any one food. And if you look, if you want to take the historical example, what would we do? We would, as humans, we would go forage around and eat, vegetables and fruits and things that were out in when they were in season all day, nuts perhaps, and then every so often we might catch an animal if that was something that would be normal in our diet and eat that. But the point of the story is that we would eat quite a bit of variety of food, and one of the traps I think a lot of these diets fall into is they become very restrictive or add additional restrictions to someone's diet. So to answer your question about beans and pulses and legumes, it's going to be somewhat individual. The phytates and some of these substances that sit on the outside can be reduced or removed by soaking the beans, for instance. But someone who runs a lot of food sensitivity tests, which is a blood marker test for sort of low-acting allergic reactions or inflammatory reactions to our foods, I do see a lot of elevated bean reactions, and I tend to see them more often when there are other leaky gut or gut irritation in the system. So they're just sort of like adding petrol to a fire that's already burning. And in those cases, certainly soaking them or maybe eating them somewhat in a more limited fashion could be helpful. I also strongly feel that that part of the problem isn't necessarily the phytates, some of these substances on the beans or even just overeating them, although that's part of it. It's also the quality of them. So, you know, going towards an organic or at least a trusted source that you know is not going to be contaminated with herbicides, pesticides, heavy metals, is going to be a big advantage. So, I'm a bit more moderate, as you can probably hear about these things. And so it's my answer to summarize is twofold. The individual's response. So if you eat beans and, you know, you feel really bloated, gassy, and you get other symptoms with it, I mean, yes, to some degree, we all get a little bit of a response because we have difficulty digesting the cell walls. But just listening to your own body's response is going to be one piece of the puzzle. You know, considering doing a blood test to evaluate your immune response or your inflammatory response to those foods as an individual is more valuable because, you know, all these diets are recommended based on sort of trends. But just because a trend applies to a certain portion of the population doesn't mean it's going to necessarily apply to you. So it's really getting back to that individual, how you respond, both how you feel in your body, and then also maybe looking at some lab markers to be useful. And in the terms of moderation, if you're eating beans every single day for every meal, I'd suggest mixing it up and or at least soaking those beans or getting fermented forms or things that are going to be digested a little more so that you're not having as much trouble digesting them, because anything that causes a great challenge to a system, especially if the system's already under a lot of burden or having a lot of problems like irritable bowel or other irritation, then they're just going to add to that. And it's not necessarily anything inherently wrong with beans or pulses, but it's just knowing who that individual is, what their digestive tract is doing, and then how they respond to it.
Being really nosy here, what kind of a diet do you personally follow? Are you gluten-free?
What kind of advice do I follow myself?
Yes, yourself.
great question. Forgive a very short background story about me. I spent most of my younger years with quite a lot of stomach infections, ear infections. I had a period where I got a lot of headaches, didn't respond well to stress, and later on it developed into more high anxiety, later on being like in high school in my early 20s. And quite a lot of eczema or just sort of nondescript skin reactions. And it led me down a path of sort of, you know, before I became a naturopathic doctor, reading books, changing my diet, you know, starting with very basic things like reducing the amount of carbohydrates, trying to get cleaner food sources, so more organic or at least sources that aren't contaminated with pesticides, and then just increasing my protein was sort of the gateway. but since then, I myself, after a lot of reading and then even doing my own food sensitivity testing, found that I had a leaky gut. I started naturopathic college back in 2008, and that forced me over time to change my diet drastically. And you know, I'd love to tell you that I was like immediately followed all the instructions and did exactly what it avoided every food that was on that list. But you know, I'm a human being, and I started to take them out and I started to notice some improvement. But like so many of my patients, I was like, I didn't want to give up cheese. Brie cheese with wine? Come on. but to answer your question, so what I found though was I had a leaky gut. I mean, in the sense that any foods I ate with frequency were causing me an inflammatory immune reaction, and what it did for me was caused poor focus, increased severe anxiety, and skin irritation from just dry skin to eczema on armpits, knees, armpits, scalp even to some degree. And so for me, the biggest things to take out were cow dairy, at least reducing at the time. I just cut out wheat, although I still ate some spelt and other gluten-containing grains, and eggs at the time too, so it was quite a shock, even those were staples of my diet. And currently, fast forward 8 years, I can tell you that my anxiety level has never been what it used to be, and certainly going through naturopathic medical school and setting up my own practice and running it for 5 years wasn't free of stress, quite the opposite. But I've never really experienced the same levels because of all that healing in my digestive tract and foods that I limit. And even now, since then, I've reintroduced some of those foods and have a much stronger sense of how I respond, and know that you know, if I eat all those foods and add some alcohol into the mix, then I'm probably not going to have a very good day the next day, you know, as far as my digestion feeling well, my focus being is going to be a bit poorer. So I can moderate it a lot more.
And do you take LDN?
I took it for a period of time, and I was just thinking that this morning. I was like, geez, I really got to try it again. I've never been diagnosed with it, but I'm sure certainly 8 years ago, if I'd gone seen more medical doctors, someone would have said I had irritable bowel syndrome, which I would have agreed with. Not that it's the most useful of diagnoses. Fast forward to 4 years ago, when I started using LDN, because I really do believe in taking my own remedies when reasonable, and I had started taking it for a while, but I can't say I was very scientific with sort of monitoring my response to it. I did certainly notice a little bit of digestive disturbance or unrest with it, which is one of the possible adjusting side effects to it or adverse effects, and I do have a very sensitive digestion. But on the upside, I was already seeing an increase in energy and focus a little bit with it, but I didn't persist to taking it more than a month. Mm-hmm. So I'm keen to someone to write me a prescription and to give it a bit of a longer-term go at it. And see if I could eat some more of those foods, too. That was my initial intention, aside from just seeing how I responded, was to see if I took it for a period of time, would I be able to eat some of those foods and reduce my reactions to them so I could reintroduce them, like that patient who I mentioned earlier with the ulcerative colitis, where she saw an expansion of her diet when she was having strong inflammatory reactions before.
The naturopathic doctors at SciMedica Health Group will treat you, not your diagnosis, and specialise in creating individualised treatment plans that deliver results regardless of your situation. If you're in the Greater Vancouver area of British Columbia, Canada, go to scimedicahealth.com, scimedicahealth.com, or call 604-541-8811. Any questions or comments you may have, please email me, Linda, Linda, at ldnrt.org. I look forward to hearing from you. Thank you for joining us today. We really appreciated your company. Until next time, stay safe and keep well.